From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine on New York State government and politics. Your host is Don Decker, with commentary by political scientist Dr. Alan Shartok. Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. I'm Dave Galletly, sitting in this week for the vacationing Don Decker. Coming up, it looks like the war on drugs is going to be a hot issue again this session. We'll hear how lawmakers intend to add ammunition to that fight. Meanwhile, a coalition of environmental groups is telling legislators to put their money where their mouths are. Governor Cuomo says an idea he presented in his State of the State address is being misunderstood. Our political analyst, Dr. Alan Shartok, speaks with the chief executive about that. And the New York Post's Fred Dicker will join us to share his insight on the state political scene. All that and more on this week's Legislative Gazette. New York State officials are hoping to hit drug dealers where it hurts, in their bank accounts. Governor Cuomo and state lawmakers this week opened 1990 strategizing on the state's drug war, and the focus was on stopping the laundering of drug trade profits. As Inga Sarda reports, legislators would like the crime to become a felony instead of a misdemeanor, and they're calling for other changes in law as well.
New York State Senator Hugh Farley, chair of that chamber's banking committee, says billions of dollars from proceeds from illegal drug deals are circulated through the nation's banking system every year, and a lot of that money could be in New York.
It's just absolutely incredible. The country and the state is awash in drug money. It's beyond your imagination. And they try to get this back into circulation legitimately, into legitimate circulation, and they're using every means that they can, and they're not going to use our financial system in New York, and that's the purpose of this. The federal government is moving on that, but we're the financial center of the world in New York, and we've got ways that we can stop this.
According to the Capital District Republican, the Senate is aiming to establish a criminal investigations bureau within the state banking department.
It's like an intelligence network within the banking department, which would be able to look at, with peace officer status, they could look at records and fingerprint people and try to eliminate any sorts of crime that is going on within our banks and within our financial community. Also, we want to eliminate sub-agents of money for money transmitters, and we want to eliminate telegraph company exemptions for money transmitters, and investigate check cashers' licenses, and increase the penalties for unlicensed money transmitters. That's where the major problem is, and strengthening all kinds of penalties for money laundering.
Meanwhile, Assemblyman Herman Farrell, a Democrat from New York City, estimates $1 trillion worth of funds is electronically sent through the American money system every day. Like Farley, Farrell contends much of that is likely to be drug money. Farrell has his own ideas of how to handle the problem.
One of the things I would like to see done is come up with some sort of system where you define what a drug, what would be a profile of a drug dealer. And you define that in terms of economics. What are the things that a drug dealer coming up with 5 hit points, let's assume. And you decide, you define 10 different activities that might define what a drug dealer is. If 5 of those are hit, that's someone you look at.
According to Farrell, there are other problems as well.
People, especially in New York City, where we have a large amount of people from all over the country, all over the world, and many of them come to America and then, of course, send money back home to their families in the islands or wherever they come from. And what's popping up is a lot of illegal money transmitters. People say to you, basically, give me your money and we will transmit that money to you back to the islands to your family. So we've got a problem where that is going on, and we're really getting a lot of people who are giving their money in such a manner that that money is unsecured because they're illegal and not licensed. And two, that legal money, which though it may be illegal in the manner it's moving through, is basically legal money, is then integrated in with illegal money and transmitted. So it's one of the things we've been looking at. As a matter of fact, in New York State, we've had I think, two indictments in the last 2 years, major indictments of firms that have been closed down for doing illegal money transmitting. One of the things we're looking at legislatively is to how to tighten up our whole money transmitting legislation.
Meanwhile, New York's Republican U.S. Senator Alphonse D'Amato, who also testified at the hearing, says ending the laundering of drug money will take work by both the state and federal governments.
We need a comprehensive overhaul of the state money laundering laws. We need tougher federal requirements that banks know their customers. There's no reason for a bank to be taking millions of dollars in cash from a customer who would have a very difficult time explaining how it is that they came by this cash. If you're dealing with a customer, for example, who's in the retail car business, how many people come in and pay tens and tens of thousands of dollars in cash? If you're dealing, as it relates to these wire transfer operations, many of them who use storefronts, who operate travel agencies, how many of them come in and deal cash? And so the banks should have that requirement to say, listen, we want to know, how is it that this cash is coming on? This has been one of our great areas of failure, I believe.
Like state lawmakers, D'Amato is also calling upon the international community to work together to end the problem. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Inga Sarda.
Stiffer penalties for money laundering are not the only way officials hope to win the war on drugs. This week, a Senate committee held a hearing to discuss other strategies, as well as take a closer look at the governor's recently released anti-drug plan. It included more than 100 recommendations and came with a $1 billion price tag. Inga Sarda spoke with Senator Tom Liebes, chair of the Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Committee.
I think in the area of treatment, we want to talk about the campus idea and the concept. We want to see that if we go into this concept, is it really going to be helpful? I think also in the area of law enforcement, we're looking at some of the suggestions that the governor came out with as far as setting up the four regional narcotic undercover teams, setting up some tougher and stringent laws that really have been state Senate philosophies and policies. So we're going to ask a lot of questions on the report. We want to see what direction we're going to be going in.
There must be some concern about the financial aspect.
There's no question about it. We are spending in New York State almost $1.2 billion right now in the area of alcoholism and drug abuse. Before we proceed any further, we want to make sure that the present dollars are being spent adequately. As you know, the Division of Substance Abuse Services has gone under some criticism lately. Mr. Martinez has resigned, and we need to take a serious look at whether or not the resources and the funding that we're now using is being spent properly and adequately. And that's one of our concerns in the state Senate. That's one of my concerns as chairman. We want to look at that before we move forward and talk about spending additional dollars.
You mentioned before that there were some other ideas that may be floating around out there to deal with the drug problem that were not included in that plan. Could you throw some of those ideas out for us?
Well, I think there's a number of things as far as they deal with different laws and tougher penalties for criminals. Last year, as you know, we outlawed drug paraphernalia. I think this year in the area of education, we're looking at tightening up school curriculum. Right now, we know that in New York State, there are many school districts that are having a number of different substance abuse programs, but we now think it's time that maybe some of these programs be coordinated, that we're all moving in the same direction and that some of the programs are not overlapping each other. I think the area of education is one that the Senate is very concerned about and will be asking a lot of questions on today.
Senator Tom Liebes, a Republican from Binghamton. New York State Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen was on hand for the hearing as well. He, of course, headed up the task force that put together the governor's report. He says he's pleased Cuomo has seemingly wholeheartedly endorsed the plan in his State of the State address, and he says legislators have an important role to play as well.
This report has been endorsed, and the specific recommendations noted in the governor's State of the State address. We will be providing the resources necessary to carry out a full-fledged fight against drugs in New York State. I wanted to go before the legislature and tell them that I don't think this is a partisan issue. I don't think it's a matter that ought to divide the legislature and the executive. we would really appreciate their additional suggestions as to what could be helpful in terms of fighting drugs in New York, but that we need legislation. We need the legislature to adopt a very progressive budget to fight drugs, both on the criminal justice and on the prevention and treatment aspects. We need to fight drugs by reducing the supply available on the streets and in the schools and buildings of New York. But we also need to reduce demand by giving people treatment and preventing people from becoming drug users in the first place.
Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen. Governor Cuomo, of course, did not just address the drug issue in his speech. He also called for the idea of limited referendum in New York. He told our political analyst, Dr. Alan Chartok, his calls have been misunderstood, that he does not want to leave the legislature out of the lawmaking process.
The limited initiative in referendum is, look, I feel very strongly about this unclaimed deposits bill. For 4 years, I've heard the governor say that there's $80 million a year that we're being ripped off for that we could have used for the environment or other purposes. For 4 years, you've not even mentioned it. You've not even debated it as a legislature. We want you to debate it.
That's why people hate the legislature.
This is limited initiative and referendum. I'm just giving examples. We hear you guys talking and gals all the time about campaign financing.
Right.
Life in prison without parole. But you never debate it on the floor.
Because they don't do it, because it's all part and
parcel. So what we want is the right to sign petitions to say, look, the judgment is still yours. You decide, up or down. But we would like to hear you discuss it, vote on it, and
well, let them
over.
Decide. They're the ones who go into closed caucuses behind closed doors in a representative democracy and don't even let anybody know how they voted when they killed bills, and the only bills that come to the floor are the ones that are going to pass anyway.
Well,
what kind of nonsense is this?
I probably, because of my background, frankly, my background has always been, before I was a public official, I was outside the walls shouting up at the guards at the parapet.
So what? Now that you're
saying,
inside,
let us in.
So now that you're in, you're going to say, forget it? I mean,
no,
you know,
no, just the opposite. Now that I'm in, I'm saying, let more people in.
Well, then let. And I thought it was a very good analogy when you said, now that democracy is coming to Eastern Europe, perhaps some should come here too. That was pretty.
No, I said a little more.
That's pretty powerful.
I said this is the source of democracy and freedom, and maybe we should expand a little bit. And that's what this limited initiative and referendum is. I think it is a perfectly responsible thing. I think, frankly, when the legislature has a chance to study it, I think some of them, because I could tell later, they had quick objections to
they
it.
They said it's dead on arrival, that's what they said.
Well, I think that's what they said about Liberty Scholarships, remember?
Right.
Remember the first book Mark Humbert did in AP stories, and this thing is, he didn't use those terms. But that's because they hadn't had a chance to hear it. And if they thought it was initiative and referendum, yeah, that would be dead. Would be dead with me. I didn't ask for that. I asked for limited initiative and referendum.
New York Governor Mario Cuomo. A wealthy Republican congressman from Manhattan has said that he may challenge Governor Cuomo's expected reelection bid this year. Representative Bill Green says he thinks Governor Cuomo is more vulnerable than he's been in the past. He said he would consider running for governor if the Republican Party agreed on a candidate early and raised campaign funds early on. Bruce Robertson takes a closer look at another Republican who's already declared his intentions.
The name Herb Holland may not be familiar to most New Yorkers, but if the Rockland County insurance agent has his way, all New Yorkers will know who he is in 1 year. Holland is running for governor. He is seeking the Republican and conservative lines in this year's race. The 57-year-old Holland, who admits he has no experience in government service, says he will run the state like a business, and he has already met with state Republican Chairman Barrett.
I met with Mr. Barrett about a couple of months ago now, and of course he threw open the whole party to me, the rights and privileges of the Republican Party. Of course, there are other people that they're looking at the present time, but people like Giuliani is not going to bring it back. It just can't happen. In other words, if they're speaking of a Giuliani per se, he's not going to win. I could bring this state back and give it back to the people of the state, and that's where it has to be, right? And I can do it.
And Holland says New York State faces a number of problems. Topping the list, crime.
I mean, everything like affordable housing is great. We can give you affordable housing, but if you can't come out at night to walk on your city street, what good is it? I can give you education, but if I can't bring my child to school without getting beat up, what good is it? What good is it if there's guns in the school? So that when it comes down to it, the first primary problem that has to be solved in New York State is the crime problem.
Holland, unlike Governor Cuomo, is in favor of the death penalty. Running for governor is an expensive proposition, but Holland says he is counting on the support of the people to finance the campaign.
We've been raising money from day one. It hasn't been as good as we like, because until you get the nomination, people are very, very hesitant. But from day one, we've gone to the public, and our campaign has been, if you'd like to see your way of life improved, and that's what I'm interested in doing, the quality of life here in New York, we ask the public to come across with $5. Give five to survive. And we people have been coming through. When we were up in Albany recently, we were just walking through the Capitol building, and a total stranger stopped me, said, I've heard of you, Mr. Holland, and handed us a $5 check. Now, that $5 check could have been $5 million to me, because I was floating on a cloud.
Holland says he's been traveling the state to gain support for his candidacy for governor. And for the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
Joining us now with a look at some other happenings this week in state government is Paul Rosenthal with the Legislative Notebook.
The state legislature's first bill of the 1990s would punish abusers of handicapped parking permits. People who pretend to be handicapped to get special parking permits would be subject to a $250 fine under the bill approved by the state Senate this week. A memo on the bill was released by Senator Norman Levy, a Nassau County Republican and sponsor of the legislation. It says it's imperative that the small number of parking spaces reserved for the handicapped are indeed available to the truly handicapped. The memo said those who knowingly and falsely represent themselves as handicapped in order to obtain a permit should be punished. State Assemblyman Jose Serrano said this week he'll declare his candidacy for the Bronx congressional seat vacated last week by Robert Garcia. The native of Puerto Rico says he'll do so as soon as the governor calls the special election. Garcia resigned his seat in disgrace after being convicted on extortion and conspiracy charges in connection with the WedTech military contracting scandal. Governor Cuomo's press secretary, Gary Fryer, says Cuomo will soon announce a special election, probably to be held in late February, for the Garcia seat. Cuomo could allow the vacancy to continue until the November election, but Fryer says the governor would not do that. Meanwhile, Frederick Salerno was nominated by Cuomo as chairman of the State University of New York Board of Trustees, and he says SUNY is a lot better than most New Yorkers think. But the New York Telephone Company president says there's always room for improvement. The appointment is subject to approval by the state Senate. New York agriculture officials had nothing but praise for Governor Cuomo's farming proposals in his 1990 State of the State address last week. State Agriculture and Markets Commissioner Richard McGuire said he was pleased to see Cuomo call for a variety of programs to maintain competitiveness in New York's agriculture sector.
Well, the ProDairy has been a success in that it has increased production on about 1,000 farms in the state of New York already, and is going to expand into more dairy farms. Certainly, this would be an advantage not only to farmers but to the consumers, as we are in a relatively short supply, which has caused the high prices to consumers. And so we should do everything possible to increase production here in New York State. So we recommended that to Governor, and he certainly mentioned it up front in his speech. Also, research and development, because we have a lot of transition in agriculture from historical uses of our farmland in the state to new and more innovative uses to meet the needs of a changing appetite, a changing diet, and a changing cultural clientele of our consumers here in the Northeast. Those two are specifically mentioned.
But McGuire says the real test comes when the governor unveils his budget on Tuesday. New York State will receive $156 million in federal anti-drug abuse grants this year, a 71% increase over last year. That's according to a research group representing governors and state legislatures. The grants are divided into three basic groups: law enforcement, alcohol, drug abuse, and mental health services, and drug-free schools and communities. New York will see its biggest increase in federal money for law enforcement, from $7 million last year to $25 million this year. And the Assembly and Senate each approved a resolution honoring the late Assembly Speaker Stanley Steingut. He died of cancer last month at age 69. Steingut, elected to the Assembly in 1952, won the Speaker's job in 1975. His legislative career ended in 1978 when he was defeated in a bid for re-election to the Brooklyn seat he had held for more than a quarter century. That's this week's Legislative Notebook. I'm Paul Rosenthal.
The 1990 legislative session is now underway, and here to share his insight on what's brewing in state politics is New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker. He spoke with our Alan Shartok.
Fred Dicker of the New York Post. Welcome.
Thank you, Alan. What's going on? It's starting to heat up at the Capitol right now.
Yeah, where's the heat? Where's all that heat coming from? I feel it, too.
Well, it's coming from a few different quarters. It's coming from this being an election year. Both the legislature and the governor and the state comptroller and the attorney general are all up for re-election, and they're going to be running. And two, it's coming from, it's kind of a cold heat. It's coming from the lack of money for the state, and everybody's very, very worried about the fact that the state is in big financial trouble. Cuomo is going to be attacked by the Republicans, and he's going to attack back on that issue, so we've got two sources of heat at least.
Tell me about, I was talking to a Republican biggie the other day who said...
Who was that, Alan? Come on.
Well, you know, you don't really have to know, but let's put it this way. He's a senator from Washington in the Republican Party. So,
a New York senator?
Yeah, I was discussing it. And a third guy who was at the group who shall go nameless,
right.
A friend of his said, well, what Ralph Marino ought to do is take the governor's budget and just pass it as is and not let the governor snooker him. As you know, what the governor tries to do is to come in low, put the heat on the eliminate a lot of things that the Republicans are going to want, put the heat on them, and then they come in and they insist that the budget be raised in some way, and then the next year he says they raise the budget quite correctly. So now this guy says, well, why don't they just pass the budget? And I said, because obviously they can't afford to take that kind of heat from their constituents and not deliver services. What do you think?
Well, Alphonse and his friends are clever people, I must say, and without giving away your source, of course. There's some merit to that, and something like that may happen. Of course, the assumption there is, Alan, that the governor is going to come in with an unusually low budget so that he doesn't get blamed for raising taxes, and then somehow if the state Senate Republicans went along with it, they would be snookering the governor. The trouble from the Republican point of view on that is that even if the governor comes in with a low budget, Alan, he's going to come in with a budget which favors New York City over the suburbs where the Republicans have their greatest strength, and which will cut things that the Republicans think are more important than the governor and the Democrats often think are important. So they couldn't quite go along with it, I don't believe. In addition, I think the governor has given strong indication that his budget is going to call for the elimination of a tax reduction that's in effect this year. That is, he's going to want to raise taxes, and I don't think the Senate Republicans right now want to do that. But it's an interesting, clever idea, and if, in fact, the governor comes in with an unusually low budget, then there may be a real temptation on the part of the Senate Republicans to do what Alphonse's friend suggested.
Yeah, so now, what's the governor up to in terms of the tax cut? I mean, what do we see is happening here?
Well, we see some mixed signals coming out. We see the governor trying to say to the business community and to those who believe that it's in the state's interest to lower taxes, because we are a very highly taxed state, especially in comparison to our neighbors. He's been saying, I understand your concerns. We've been doing our best. We want to keep taxes low. But on the other hand, he's been strongly suggesting since last summer, and I think he did it first on your radio program, that the last year of the tax cut, which is now in effect this year, 1990, maybe should be put off for another year so that the state, with its severe financial problems, can use the $400 million or so that it would otherwise be taking in. It's a very interesting philosophical question. I mean, the question is, where does the $400 million really belong? With the taxpayers of New York or with the politicians so they can spend it on programs they say are important? There's a guy over at the Senate Finance Committee, Abe Blackman, a very smart guy, I think, who made an interesting observation. He said that, in effect, this last year of the tax cut has become a budget cap. And if it's left in place, it will force the government to make some economies that he says he thinks should be made. And then if it's not left in place, if it's repealed and the taxes are increased, it will mean the state wasn't able to live within a budget cap.
Now, the governor, in his State of the State, called for a cap on expenditures. Was that for real?
No. He's done that for years. Hugh Carey, his predecessor, did that. I think he does it, again, to sound good, to say he really believes in fiscal restraint. But, you know, interestingly enough, Alan, he's called for caps, Cuomo has called for caps in the past, and his own budgets have exceeded what he called for in the caps. Now, he would tend to blame the legislature for that, and he may be at least partially right, but calling for a cap is like calling for life without parole in the state right now. Neither one, it appears, has a chance of passage.
The New York Post's Fred Dicker, speaking with our own Alan Shartok. A number of environmental groups got together this week to announce their legislative package. As Brian Shields reports, it was in honor of Earth Day 1990. He spoke with the head of one of those groups, Lee Wasserman, executive director of New York's Environmental Planning Lobby.
First, you may ask, what exactly is Earth Day?
Well, Earth Day is a celebration of the need for everyone to get involved with the environmental movement in every walk of our life. That's each of our individual habits, and further up, companies and industries that take action that affect the health of our environment and citizens. So it's a way for all of us to join together to become much more conscious of what we're doing, what we can do to improve, impress upon our legislators and other decision makers out there the need to consider the environment first rather than second, and to make changes in our lives that will make all the difference.
According to Wasserman, a coalition of environmental groups has put together a legislative package, bills they would like to see become laws this year.
It basically encompasses six areas, and they include recycling, land preservation, measures to combat global warming, the Safe Drinking Water Act, citizen suits, and the Essential Habitat Bill. And the reason that we thought it was necessary to establish a standard for environmental achievement in 1990 is that I think the public is going to see a number of environmental wolves in sheep's clothing. And what I mean by that is we're going to be hearing about many proposals coming out of the legislature this year and many claims of environmental concern. But it's very important to let the legislature know that in 1990, this most important year, the only thing that's going to count is the bills that pass the legislature and become law, not any pledges of environmental fidelity. So this package is going to be the barometer of the legislature's true feelings and concern about the environment and the public's and meeting the public's demand that they do something this year.
Wasserman also says it's helpful it's an election year. He says that fact may prompt lawmakers to not just talk, but take action as well.
The public has said over and over that they want the environment to be one of the top areas that the legislature focuses on this year. We've seen that in any number of polls, and legislators have certainly heard it personally from their constituents. So setting up this Earth Day package with all of us focusing more attention on the environment than we even usually do, which is considerable because of the celebration of Earth Day and the election, the important election, I might add, that's coming up, I think we stand a chance of having a tremendous session for the environment in Albany, but it'll be up to all of us to impress upon our legislators that that's what we'll be demanding.
Lee Wasserman, the executive director of New York's Environmental Planning Lobby. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brian Shields.
And that about does it for this week. The Legislative Gazette is produced by Inga Sarda with technical assistance from Phil Sluzars. The program is made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available at 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution. For the Gazette, I'm Dave Galletly, sitting in for the vacationing Don Decker.